feed them to the sharks right now.
Get them hype right now.
Yeah. You know the ground is on.
Yeah.
Everybody that trains, you know the game.
Yeah.
So let's get it. Slap it up, bump it, and roll.
Hey.
Yeah, that's the way that it goes. Ain't no better way to better yourself in this game. You're feeling the growth.
That's
time on the map. We put in the work. Believe it ain't easy, I know. But we train for the love of the game, the love of the art. Now slap it up, bump it, let's roll.
Welcome to episode 5 of the BJJ Campaign Podcast. My name is Jeff Boone. I'm an A3, blue belt, no stripes.
And this is Phil Kors. I'm an A2, white belt, 3 stripes.
Very good, Philly.
Yeah, getting better.
And we've got a special guest with us today. This is our first guest. Pretty excited about this podcast, to be honest with you. This is our general in our campaign with jiu-jitsu. Professor John Plyler, Fight to Win Denver, who Phil and I have trained with since we began our jiu-jitsu campaign. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jeff. What's happening, guys?
Not much.
Appreciate you having me on.
And we need to clarify, because every time we introduce someone, we want to know their gi size.
Oh, and I did it wrong.
It's all right. It's all right. That's what we're here for.
That's how I do it wrong every time.
So, A3L.
A long in there. Yes, he does have long limbs, ladies and gentlemen.
Black belt, 1 stripe.
1 stripe. Got that 1 stripe. And you sew on your stripes, right?
Yeah, they're going to be on that belt for a little while, so I don't see that belt changing anytime soon. So.
Probably a good idea. Probably a good idea. So thanks for being here. Really appreciate it today. We're going to talk about some of the things that Phil and I don't have experience with, right? That's, well, maybe we do have experience. Some of the things that can annoy your professor.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure we'll get into a few things where we'll be like, oh, yeah, okay, well, good to know.
I do that.
so just looking to John. John, what, you know, I know you, I think you've even written a blog post on it. At one point or another, on some,
we may have touched on some of these. Yeah, we started talking about, you know, ideas for the show, and you know, one of the things that said might be interesting to discuss is some of the, well, started out as top 10 things, right, that drive your instructor crazy.
Went right through that, didn't you?
Just started jotting a few things down off the top of my head. I think we're probably closer to 20 at this point, but who's counting? But really, you know, a lot of these are going to be kind of universal, probably for most academies, most instructors. Some may be more kind of personal pet peeves, but you know, that was the way I kind of initially approached this. But really, probably a better way is things that students, especially new students, may want to just be aware of that they, you know, may not even realize, because all of these things, you know, are very common, and there's a good reason for all of these different issues that may annoy your professor.
So what's the top one that really gets your goat?
Well, these we can, you know, start to hit on some of these, and they're in no particular order, but like I said, you know, really this is more about what things that you can avoid in order to make yourself more successful. So maybe phrase it like that rather than, you know, what drives your instructor crazy. They do drive your instructor crazy.
Yeah, for sure. No, we definitely want the positivity.
So one, you know, just, this is one that I'm sure is very universal that anybody that teaches, jiu-jitsu can relate to, is the guy or girl, but usually it's a guy, that just really, really wants to train. They call up, they want to come by the academy, get some information, really want to train. They've heard about jiu-jitsu and how awesome it is, and you know, they, you know, more than anything else, they really, really want to train. But that same guy or girl is willing to make zero investment, either, you know, financially, time-wise, you know, there's a whole list of excuses before they ever even step on the mat of, you know, they really want to train really bad, but, you know, here's all the reasons why I can't train.
So, I want to hit on a story about that, because that brings up a really good point. And that is, you know, I kind of told the story, whatever, on the first episode, I believe, Phil, wasn't it? Into jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And so I called you on the phone, mm-hmm. and I said, hey, listen, I am a real fat ass, and I want to train, but I need to lose some weight before I come into training.
Right.
And I believe the analogy that you may have used with me was, well, if you were going to go take swimming lessons to learn to swim, would you try to learn to swim before you took those swimming lessons? I was like, good point.
Probably good point. Something like that.
Yeah. And I came in that very day. Yeah. So I think that's a great point, but continue with your
thought. And that's one, you know, that's very common. You know, I want to train, but I want to get in shape first. Well, you know, the way you get in shape is you come in and train. If you, you know, the people that are going to get in shape first are not going to do either one, you know.
Right.
You know, the reality is, and I get it, you know, jiu-jitsu is not for everybody. 100%.
Yes, it is.
Now, I think it should be, but I understand it's not for everybody. It's not everybody's thing. And some people, you know, come in and they try it out and, you know, they give it a fair chance, and maybe it's not for them. Now, when I say give it a fair chance, 6 months, that's a fair chance.
Agreed.
Okay? Not two classes. But if it's not for you, it's not for you. But, you know, the people that want to train are on the mat. You know, there's not a lot of excuses. You know, they don't make a lot of noise. They just come in and sign up and get on the mat and show up for class. And that's pretty much it, you know. So it's not if you really, really want to train, you know where we're at, you know. And I always say the hardest part, and it's true, the hardest part, especially for a brand new person with no experience, is just getting through the door, because it can be kind of intimidating, you know.
Definitely is, yeah.
So.
Philly, talk about that. Did you drive around the block a couple times?
No, I didn't, but I almost walked back to the car, yeah, the first class or whatever, yeah. Kind of waiting outside, and everybody was standing outside, and yeah, everybody knows each other, and you don't know anybody, and everybody's dressed weird, you know, and you're like,
And that's why it's super important, you know, and I always stress to all of our guys that, you know, when that new person walks in the door, you know, be the first one to come up and talk to them, and I know you guys are real good about doing that, you know, and a few others as well. You know, Landon comes to mind. Landon almost talks to him too much sometimes, but you know, it's the right intention, you know, of, you know, welcoming them into the academy, because you know, that brand new person that comes in and knows absolutely nothing could be one of your best training partners one day.
Absolutely.
You know? But if they don't feel welcome, or they come in and they're intimidated, you know, they may walk away from it, and you know, neither one of you then get the benefit of them training jiu-jitsu.
Well, especially whenever somebody walks in and they're around your same size, right? That's what I'm like, hey, man, how's it going? Yeah. But two, I think you're right, John. I mean, you see it, you know, because let's face it, sharing the mat together, that's an intimate time. And you know, we are 100%, you know, someone whenever you share the mat.
Well, absolutely.
And so we get in those whenever we start class, you know, everybody that's been training for a while sits and talks, but I think it is so important that you welcome them in. And I think it's one of the reasons why our academy has grown so much, right?
Yeah,
is that we've got that correct culture from top-down leadership in you that says, hey, you know, let's try to make this for everybody.
Yeah.
And let's try to give it the best opportunity. Because like you said, jiu-jitsu, not everyone can do jiu-jitsu. I am going to say jiu-jitsu is for everybody. But not everyone can do jiu-jitsu, whatever their hang-ups are. But that gives them the best opportunity to really see. Because if you're not welcomed into an academy, then, you know, you're probably going to plod your way through the class and get out of there and never come again, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely. Not what we want. I mean, the social aspect of jiu-jitsu is super important, you know, and it's something that we really can't overlook, you know, both on the mat and off the mat, you know. I mean, how often do you get together and hang out with your buddies that you train with, you know, and that camaraderie that you develop on the mat? I mean, literally, I have friends from all over the world that I've met through jiu-jitsu, you know, which is what makes it awesome. And that's one of, to me, the biggest benefits of doing what we do. And, you know, man, you guys know, you've been doing it long enough to know that jiu-jitsu is hard. It's not easy. And there's a lot of days that you're going to struggle, and there's days that you're beat up and you're tired and you don't feel like training. And what gets you coming in the academy is your buddy, you know, hitting you up, sending you a text message, hey, you coming to class tonight? You know, it's that social aspect that motivating each other that keeps you coming back in the academy when it's not always, you know, easy.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, I can't tell you how many times that me and Phil or Mark or any of the guys have, you know, we've got a messenger chain, BJJ group messenger chain where, you know, whether it's training or whether it's stupid memes, love the memes, so
it's part of it.
you know, we share that, and it is kind of a brother and sisterhood, what we share. So there's one. Give us something
else. So another one here, and again, these are not in any particular order, just kind of as they came to mind, but inconsistency, you know. So this is, once you've made the decision to train and sign up, you know, you got to get on the mat. That's the biggest thing. If I had to give any one piece of advice to a new student, you know, how do you get good at jiu-jitsu? Show up. You know, the people that show up get better. The people that don't show up don't. And, you know, you don't have to be in there 5 or 6 days a week. You don't have to be in there twice a day. But a couple days a week is pretty manageable, particularly, you know, most of our classes are about an hour long format. You know, 2 hours out of your week is not too unreasonable, you know, to just get through the door and put your feet on the mat. And, you know, we all have stuff that goes on outside. We all have, you know, lives outside of the academy, and we all get busy with work and family and friends and kids and, you know, whatever else. But, you know, make it a part of your regular schedule. Make it a part of your routine. Put it on your calendar, you know. Have your regular days. And, you know, you might miss a day if you're a Monday, Wednesday guy and, you know, something comes up. Of course, that stuff happens. You know, you can maybe try to make it in on another day, at least make it in on an open mat. You know, there's a way to find time to train. You know, there were times, you know, I did a lot of, when I worked in law enforcement and did a lot of shift work and, you know, crazy schedules, and you had to train when you could. You know, sometimes it was during off times. There was a good period of time where I was getting up at 4:30 in the morning and driving an hour and a half one way to go train at 6 a.m. But you find a way to make it happen if it's important. So, you know, and I would way rather have the student that is training consistently 2 to 3 days a week. 3 days, I think, is ideal, especially in the beginning.
Helps you make those connections, right? Yeah, I mean, sure. The more time you spend on the mat, the more connections you make, the more you put things together, the better that you get at jiu-jitsu.
But, you know, saying that, you know, there are, you know, some of the hardcore guys, some of them are in this room, that are there 4 or 5 days a week, twice a day. You know, that's great if you can maintain it. Most people can't. The ones that can, I mean, I was one of those that, you know, is an exception. And you sacrifice other things in your life sometimes for it, but, you know, it depends on how important it is to you, I guess. But I would way rather have the guy that's consistently there 2-3 days a week over the long term than the guy that's there 5-6 days a week, twice a day. And I've seen so many of those guys come through and they get burned out, you know, 4, 5, 6 months down the road, you know, you don't see them. Yep. They start to disappear a little bit at a time, you know. And it's a very recognizable pattern. You know, I can tell when someone's quitting jiu-jitsu usually before they can.
Yeah.
Because I've seen it so many times, you know. So.
And I would add to that on the 2 to 3 days a week, you know, an hour isn't good enough just for the instruction. You got to stay and roll.
Well, right? That's on the list also.
Good. That's a good segue.
But we got to ease people into it, right?
You're right. And listen, as an example, you know, Phil, I role-shamed Phil into staying his first time, and then he realized that that's actually the funnest part.
Yeah, for sure.
of jiu-jitsu.
I mean, who knows how long it would have taken if he didn't do that, you know?
Years.
Yeah, it's not, you know, and the way we do it, I mean, look, when I started training, it was a different mentality. It was a different, you know, culture. You know, you just got fed to the sharks day one. And
not really a good way to promote someone to come back, though.
No, but, and, you know, a lot of people didn't. But the ones that stuck it out, you know, you ended up with a bunch of tough guys. But, you know, you just got beat up for 6 months. And then if you were still there, they would start to kind of show you something, you know. And that was how I started. But that's not the best way, because not everybody that comes into the academy comes in as a tough guy. But they can learn to become a tough guy or girl.
You know? Yeah, for sure.
They can be developed into that. But if you know, if you scare them off, you know, the first couple weeks, you know, they're never going to get the long-term benefit of training jiu-jitsu. And, you know, ultimately that's what it is, because the guys that are the tough guys are not the ones that really need jiu-jitsu. The guy that comes in that's already strong, already athletic, you know, they've done, you know, sports all their life, they're in pretty good shape, you know, they have confidence. Those guys, you know, obviously they can benefit from training jiu-jitsu,
sure,
of course, but those are not the ones who really need it the most, you know? So we got to make sure that you know, those other people are comfortable, and that we work them into that live training, into that live sparring. But yes, that one was also on my list of, you know, the people that don't stay for sparring. Man, you have to roll. You know, the thing that makes jiu-jitsu so effective and why it's so respected among all the other martial arts is the liveness of the training. That, you know, every single technique that we do, we put it in the lab. You know, the mat is the laboratory, and we put it on the mat and test it out and see where it fails. And, you know, when it fails, we try to fix it. And, you know, you learn through failure. But you have to test yourself in that crucible of live training with a resisting partner. It's super important. And it's completely different than just drilling moves with a cooperative partner, which also is important, of course. But yeah, you got to get the roll time in. And, you know, again, doesn't have to be every day, and you don't have to spar hard every day. But yeah, you know, you should be rolling at least a couple times a week for sure.
Yeah, totally agree with that. And you know, to making those connections, and like you said, drilling's important, right? I mean, you want to be 100% correct in your technique in drilling, because even if you're 50% or more correct in your technique while you're live sparring and you've got the right situation arise, that technique's going to work.
Yeah, hopefully. Right?
Hopefully.
Yeah. The idea of the drilling is to perform the technique as flawlessly, as seamlessly, as perfectly as you can. Obviously, you know, 100% perfection is kind of an ideal that we never really reach, but that's the goal, right? So no matter how long you've been doing this particular technique or series of techniques, that, you know, it can always get better. And if you keep that mindset, you know, kind of that beginner mindset, no matter how long you train, then, you know, jiu-jitsu never gets boring.
Yeah. And I feel like this yesterday's class, I went from 25% perfect on my triangle to good 28% perfect on my triangle. I think I took a good 3% step on that, in that class.
Big improvements.
It's always good to have room for improvement.
Plenty.
You want to make sure you have something to work on.
No worries there. Let's shift gears just a little bit with that, because, you know, one of the great things about, and I know Phil and I both help with the kids, about jiu-jitsu is it's so good for kids. You know, I tell a story with my friends. There's some kids that have come in that have started jiu-jitsu. I won't mention any names, but, you know, where they were looking down, that, you know, they wouldn't look you in the eye. They weren't hanging around with any of the other kids or anything like that. And then just after, like, maybe a month of jiu-jitsu, these kids are laughing and playing with the other kids, they have, you know, you can visibly see their self-confidence improve.
Yeah.
And sure. And they just, they come out of their shell, and they it allows them to be the person that they should be growing up to be.
Yeah.
And so with that, I'd like to talk about some, you know, because some of the parents of the kids, they listen to the podcast. Mm-hmm. And so what's your best advice for parents of jiu-jitsu kids?
Man, you know, this one is, this one's kind of tricky. And I was actually talking to one of the parents about this recently, because, you know, I mean, my kid trains jiu-jitsu, I want to see, and has been training for a long time and doing really well. And of course I want to see him do well. I want to see him succeed and do his best. And that's what every parent wants for their kids. But you know, the thing you have to realize with the kids, is the most important thing, at that age, at the younger ages, is that they enjoy training, that they have fun and they love jiu-jitsu. Because if they do, then they'll do it for their whole life, you know. I don't need a six-year-old to have a perfect armbar or perfect triangle choke, or, you know. So I'm not that concerned about their technical ability. Obviously, the longer they stick around, the better that they will get at it. But, you know, one of the things that I see some of the parents sometimes do, and they have the best of intentions, but they will actually end up pushing their kid out of jiu-jitsu because they push them too much, you know. The best thing you can do for your kid is, number one, get him to class, you know, again, consistency, right? You know, show up, get him on the mat. Our kids only train twice a week, which I think is a good pace for the kids, because we want them to be able to do other activities, whether it's soccer or baseball or swimming lessons or gymnastics. All of those things are good and important, and it's good for them to be well-rounded. Jiu-jitsu should be definitely a part of that, though.
And by the way, they're going to be better at those other things if they do jiu-jitsu. Oh, just the mobility, their level of fitness, mm-hmm. that they're going to experience, you know, just with the warm-ups that we do, gives them the good cardiovascular exercise. And so you're going to be, you know, I would say that jiu-jitsu is a great off-season training for wrestling, for just about anything that involves cardio. Yeah.
For life.
Or yeah. Agility. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, get him there, bring him to class, support him. After class, you know, if you hang around, a lot of the parents like to hang around and watch class, and that's fine. Just sit on the sidelines. Don't make comments. Don't coach. When your kid's on the mat, they belong to us. You know, if there's an issue we can't handle on the mat, I promise you, we will let you handle it. But we can pretty much handle whatever happens out there. I've seen that come up yet. Yeah. So, you know, don't be that parent that wants to sit on the sideline and coach your kid. Number one, you probably don't know what you're talking about unless you train jiu-jitsu too. And in which case, if you train jiu-jitsu and you've been training long enough, put your gi on and get out on the mat and help out, because it'll help you too. But and otherwise, just sit on the sideline and watch. And then when you leave, don't recap the whole class on the ride home and during dinner. And, hey, you know, you really should have, you know, done this on that sweep. Or, you know, I saw when you were rolling with this kid, you know, you should have been trying. Like, you know, the only thing that should be is, hey, did you have fun today? Did you learn something? Awesome. Move on.
And I would even go one step and say, if you talk about jiu-jitsu, make sure that it's the kid bringing up jiu-jitsu.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, I think that's a simple principle that you can follow, to where you know you're not talking about it too much or pushing too much or anything, because we see that in every sport, not just jiu-jitsu, right? I mean, you know, those possibly living vicariously through their through their kids.
There's a lot of that. And you know, you'd be surprised how often the kids end up dragging the parents onto the mat, you know?
I love that.
The parents start training because the kids are training. And so, if you get home and the kid wants to practice their moves, you know, they bring it up. Yeah, of course, absolutely support it. You know, I remember a few years ago, Joey was a little younger and had just gotten back from working a Naga tournament, you know, traveling all weekend, just completely beat up, tired, just wanted to go home and rest. And I got home and Joey said, hey, Dad, you want to go down to the academy and drill some moves? And, of course, absolutely, you know?
Not which really, but awesome. Yes, absolutely.
Which is pretty awesome, you know, when your kid brings it up and they're the one that, you know, that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, don't push it too much. Some of the parents, you know, the competition side is something, especially with the kids, that, you know, some kids do well with it, some don't, some adults don't do well with it. You know, it can be a lot of pressure, and I've seen the competition side ruin a lot of good kids, you know. So make sure if your kid's competing, it's because they want to compete, and that you encourage them and do it with the right mindset, you know. Win or lose, you know, hey, good job. I mean, it takes a lot of courage to just step out on the mat, you know, especially for a little kid.
So important. Yeah. It takes a lot of courage for a little kid. It takes a lot of courage for a teenager. Mm-hmm. For, you know, what Joey did in Atlanta, to go to a professional organization to do a super fight, you know, against another, what they were near the same age,
almost
right?
A month apart, I think.
Yeah, both green belts in front of a crowd. I don't know how big the crowd was, but I saw the
several hundred
arena, and it was incredible. Mm-hmm. And to be able to go and do that, you know, I mean, I've competed, Phil's competed. There's nothing easy about competition, including the training going up to it.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I mean, I think it is very important that, you know, you keep a nice mindset whenever, and a very calming mindset. And I'll never forget this. One of the speakers that we had at a work function, they were ex-military, and they said, calm is contagious,
mm-hmm.
right? And that epitomizes what you are whenever you're coaching. Even if it's Joey, yeah. Even if you're coaching Joey on the sideline, your voice never really raises, you know, maybe a sense of urgency in places yeah. where there is a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
But just having that calm voice instructing you in the proper things to do. And like you said, the outcome is really inconsequential, right? Everybody wants to win, but the fact of the matter is, if there's 10 people in your weight class whenever you're competing, you've got a 10% chance that you're going to win, yeah. right? I mean, that's just it.
Yeah, and I always tell people, you know, that want to compete, that, you know, there's benefit to competing if it's something that you enjoy doing and you want to do it, but, you know, the reality of what actually happens the day of the competition is not what's important. It's all the work and you know, the effort that you put in getting ready for it, you know, that makes you better. That ultimately is what's more important. But yeah, I mean, from, you know, having competed a lot myself and you know, reffed all over the world and seen a lot of coaching, some good and most not so good. You know, yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter, kids or adults, but especially with the kids, you know, the drives me crazy to see the coaches that just sit there and you know, scream at their kids the entire match, regardless of whether the kid's winning or losing. You know, and, you know, number one, they can't hear most of what you're saying anyway. And ultimately, you know, you can't win the match for them. They have to, you know, you train them the best that you can and you put them out there and, you know, let them do their best. And, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world for them to lose a match. You know, sometimes those are the things that actually teach you the most, you know, so. But yeah, getting back to the parents, you know, just.
And just one
yeah.
other thing on that, losing the match, Phil and I were talking about it. And immediately after the match, if you win or lose, or even after the competition, you know, I'll say, you know, your friends ask you, how'd you do in the competition? Oh, I won. Oh, cool. That's great. How'd you do in the competition? Well, I lost. Oh, cool. That's great.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, yeah. you care because it's your own little microcosm. It's your own little universe. But not one person cares.
Yep.
So yeah, I just think, true. I think that too, you know, your attitude at your loss. I mean, it's easy to be a good winner, right?
Oh, for sure.
But it's not easy to be a good loser.
Yeah, and but those are the ones that stick with you, you know? I mean, I can probably tell you almost every single match that I lost, you know, because you remember those and you you learn from them, you know. So those are sometimes even more valuable. But
oh, agree.
But yeah, just, you know, to get back to the parents, you know, bring them to class, sit on the sideline, watch if you want, but don't comment, don't coach, don't, you know, don't push your kids too much. Let them just enjoy jiu-jitsu, you know. Don't expect them to be perfect, and trust the instructors. You know, you're paying us a lot of money to teach your kids because we're professionals at it. We've been doing it a long time. We know what we're doing. Just trust us. You know, there's a process. And, you know, your kid will see positive results. It's not going to happen overnight. But yeah, just trust us and believe in the system. And that goes not only for the kids. That goes for any of the students, you know. Trust your instructor. Believe in the system. It might not make sense to you at the time. And I remember being a white belt, being a blue belt, and, you know, my instructor would show something, and I'm just like, man, I just don't know. That doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense. Like, I really feel like I have a better way, you know?
That never happens to me. Does that happen to you, Phil? Does that
ever not happen? Yet.
Yeah. And then, always, you know, happens,
always.
Now I look back and I'm like, oh yeah, now I understand why, you know, we did it that way. It makes a lot more sense, right? So you don't have the same perspective. So yeah, trust your instructor, you know.
I think that's a really important lesson, too, because, you know, like you said, I have, just to give an anecdote, I mean, we all have places where we feel our jiu-jitsu, that I remember distinct places where I felt like I was getting better at jiu-jitsu, and I want to share one of them, and that was, you know, I think I'd been in it 3 or 4 months, and quite honestly, I'd just been able to get through the warm-ups, you know, I mean, I struggled getting through just the warm-up section, and was, you know, this wrestler who was going 100 miles an hour for 2 minutes, right? The total, and I said it before, it's a total asshole right way to roll. Don't do what I did, ladies and gentlemen, on that, because yeah, it's not a good way to roll. And I just remember one day you and I were going together, and I was just freaking out. I don't know what was going on. You were on top of me, and I was just freaking out, and I was, you know, had a lot of apprehension. And at that very moment, you put your hand on my chest, and you go, and I'm sure it wasn't hard to hold me down or do anything, but you put your hand on my chest, and you probably barely had your knees on the floor because my belly was so big. But you just said, Jeff, just breathe. Just breathe. And it was calming. It was consoling. And like at that moment, a light bulb went off in my head. I was like, man, you've got to calm down. You've got to kind of be more present and be better at what you're doing, and not just physically. You just have to be better mentally at what you're doing. And that really helped me. It didn't only help me with rolling and not being an asshole anymore. Well, maybe sometimes, you know, me and Phil talk shit to each other while we're rolling. But that's the fun part of it. But to really, I don't know, just transformed the way I thought in my critical thinking, not only whenever I was rolling, but also whenever I was listening to instruction. You know, I would get diverted and everything else, and you just have to listen to that instruction. Like you said, say, you know, I was like, well, maybe you could do it this way, thinking in my own head. Mm-hmm. But then after I just kind of released that and let you be the professor, which is what you are, and the guide along this campaign. Until I did that, that was actually the seminal moment where I felt like, all right, I've gone on to the next step here. Yeah. And I think it was not too long after that where I got my first stripe on my white belt. Mm-hmm. And
it's like you said, so much of it is mental and just learning to stay calm under pressure. You know, that's something you hear all the time in jiu-jitsu, but it's really very true, you know. Just you know, having somebody on top of you and you can't breathe and you can't move and you don't know what to do and you panic and you're claustrophobic, you know, it's a terrible feeling. And anybody that's trained jiu-jitsu for a long time, you know, or even sometimes a relatively short time has been there, you know, has experienced that. The good news is the longer you train, the less you experience that, you know.
Yeah.
It's stress inoculation. You know, you get comfortable in those bad positions by putting yourself in those bad positions over and over again and realizing that you're not going to die, you know.
Yeah.
Most likely.
As Master Ken says, the easiest move in jiu-jitsu, the double tap.
Yeah, just tap, you know, if you need to. But you know, yeah, so much of it is mental, you know, that if you just learn to calm down and not panic and think your way out of it, you know. And yeah, you know, you actually touched on a couple other things that I had on my little list there. One was, you know, about being the spazzy guy, you know.
No,
obviously, you know, not going too hard too fast. You know, the analogy I always give is, you know, you wouldn't take a 15-year-old kid that just got his learner's permit and take him to Daytona and let him go 200 miles an hour. He's going to hit the wall.
Bad idea.
And it's exactly the same thing when you're a beginning student in jiu-jitsu and you first start sparring. And if you're a big guy and a strong guy and an athletic guy, it's even worse because you're more dangerous, not only to yourself, but to your training partners. So, one, it's a safety issue, again, for both you and your training partner. Two, it really inhibits your learning, you know. Jiu-jitsu is about efficiency. It's not about, you know, accomplishing what you're trying to do through strength and power and athleticism. So, you know, yeah, did you get that sweep or did you escape from that position because you powered out of it? Or did you do it technically, you know? You might be able to power out of it if you're bigger or stronger. It's not going to work when you're the smaller guy. And everybody's going to be the smaller guy sometime.
Yeah,
you know, that's the perspective that you have to have.
Yeah.
So, you know, that one about, you know, learning to calm down, learning to just, you know, stay composed, composure, you know. We talk about that in our 753 code, you know, that we have hanging on the wall in the academy. Fudoshin, you know, it's emotional balance. And it's something that applies not only on the mat, but in your life. You know, everybody has ups and downs. You know, don't get super overly excited when you hit that sweep, because you get excited and you start celebrating the sweep and you don't stabilize your position, and next thing you know you're back on the bottom, you know, or you're getting caught in a choke because you weren't paying attention to what the other guy was doing, you know. And same thing, you get caught in an arm lock and you tap, don't get upset about it, you know. Obviously nobody really wants to tap. The goal of jiu-jitsu is go tap the other guy, right? But we all understand that you don't get good at this without tapping a lot. The tap is an opportunity to learn. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Try not to make the same mistake consistently over and over again. Learn from it, but it's okay to tap if you need to tap. You know, take care of yourself. Don't get hurt. But, you know, don't lose sleep over every single time that you tap the mat, because ultimately, you know, jiu-jitsu is supposed to be fun. We got to keep it fun. We got to not make it more stressful than what it already is. It's already stressful physically and mentally and emotionally, but you know, it should be a stress reliever. So
yeah, I agree with that. And I think that you have to talk to your training partners.
Yeah,
right. Sure. I mean, if someone listen, it's important you're sharing that same mat space. It's important that if someone's doing something that you're not comfortable with, or if they're, you know, right off the bat going 1,000%, you know, to let them know, you know, after, I mean, I'll give a for example, someone that was going, you know, a white belt had been trained for a while, 1,000% off the bat, and then I swept them in like a second and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, I said, hey, I only mirror your intensity. So if you don't go 1,000%, then I'm not going 1,000%, and we're both getting work in.
Yep.
To be able to, you know, to be able to accomplish our goals on the mat.
Yeah,
so I think, sure, that's real important.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't want to be, you know, that guy that goes too hard. You know, that's a very common problem. Again, particularly for the bigger, stronger, you know, natural athletes that come in when they first start training, because they don't know anything else. They don't even realize a lot of times that they're doing it. It's just their natural instinct, you know, their kind of survival mechanism. And until they develop a little more technique, that's kind of all they have to rely on. So it is tough. And it's a consistent problem. But, you know, pay attention, because I'm pretty sure your training partners and your instructor has probably said to you, hey, slow down, breathe, stop going so hard, you know?
It only took me like 100 times to say that to stop.
But, you know, some people don't get that message. And then what happens is you end up being that guy that nobody wants to train with. And it's really hard to get good at jiu-jitsu without having good training partners, you know? And so when you start being that guy that nobody really wants to roll with, and rightfully so, because they don't want to get injured.
Yeah.
You know, that's a problem.
And I alluded to it before, but, you know, I think that if you keep the mindset of that you train 50% for you, 50% for your training partner, then you've got 100% worth of training there, and you're both getting better.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
Phil, you've been awful talkative
today. No, still here?
A lot of good information.
I mean, you know, you can't come in. And All right. Just making sure.
Well, you know, actually, it's, you know, Phil's kind of quiet anyway, but actually, I like that, you know. You know, to me, the guys that, you know, they just show up in the academy and they, you know, they come in to train and they work hard and they drill and they pay attention and, you know, they ask questions at appropriate times, but, you know, they don't make a lot of noise. They just kind of go with the program and, you know, man, that's honestly the best way to be.
That epitomizes Phil.
100%.
Except he is very talkative, Charlie. You haven't seen that side of him. But we'll sit outside the academy. I know you've seen that for an hour or two afterwards, just talking about the stuff that we've done. And believe me, it's not me talking most of the time like it is here. So let's take it down a notch. Let's do something fun. Phil, who's the person you'd most like to put on soup? All right, and before we go on here, this is a Dustin Dennis. He does
this segment sponsored by Campbell's Soup.
Yeah. Dustin Dennis does seminars at the mothership every year. Great content, great drilling. And he's just a funny character, wouldn't you say?
He is definitely a character.
So, but one of his sayings was, put him on soup. We might make this a regular segment, put him on soup. Because you choke them so hard that they can't eat anything but soup for the next couple of weeks.
I think the phrase he used was so that they have to eat through a straw for the next month. So. Yeah, Dustin's a funny guy, but really, really awesome jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, for sure. Again, we're not advocating putting anyone on soup, ladies and gentlemen, but if you were to put somebody on soup, Phil, who would it be?
Man, I've told you this since day one. I'm trying to choke you.
Yeah.
I've always
fair enough
said that since fair day enough one.
You have choked me plenty of times.
It's so much fun.
It is. Yeah. I know. Still haven't been on soup yet. close a couple times. Tight triangle. Next level triangle. But no, I just thought that was fun. Wanted to put it in there. Phil, for you, what was your most fun moment on the map?
That's not said like map. You said map, yeah. Map. That's not a realistic question.
Wow. I know what mine is, but I want you to go first.
I don't think there's not a fun part. That's not a fair question.
I know, but there's got to be a most fun part. All right.
I would say probably the best feeling is like that, like with the loop choke, you know, we drilled it 1,000 times, and then you get to the point where I was rolling with somebody and I hit the entry to the loop choke. That feeling is really good, right? I mean, I didn't know what to do after that, but right, just getting there,
right,
you know, after drilling it for 500 times, you know, that one, that next step is always the best.
I think you're conservative. I think you did more than 500.
Probably, yeah. That, like, finally when it works, when you don't even think about it and you just do it, right? That's like the best.
It's always fun when things start to click, you know?
Right.
Yeah. John, how about you? Your funnest time on the mat. Like it could be you, it could be with Joey. I mean, you mentioned one earlier training with Joey. I think that's an awesome experience, one that I'll never have, but to be able to train with your son and see the progression. Man, he's a killer.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm really grateful to have the opportunity to teach him and train with him and you know, spend time on the mat with him. And my older son Davey too, you know, he's not gotten into jiu-jitsu as much as Joey has, but you know, he spent his time on the mat and we still mess around a little bit off the mat as well.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, it's always amazing, and you know, watching him from the time that, you know, he's, you know, 4 or 5 years old, kind of just sitting on the edge of the mat watching, to now 10 years later, and he's starting to actually get good at jiu-jitsu. So
that he is.
It's pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, there's, you know, like Phil said, the mat's my happy place. So it's always good. You know, there's been a couple times though that just cool experiences that kind of come to mind. You know, one, well, actually both of these were in Brazil. You know, having the opportunity to travel down there and train, obviously, to the motherland is a pretty awesome experience and something I definitely recommend for anybody that's serious about jiu-jitsu. I'm already trying to figure out how I can get back down there sometime soon. But, you know, I had a pretty cool experience.
By the way, I'm in on that trip. You're taking
I'll make it happen. You know, both training down there and reffing down there in a competition that, you know, a couple cool experiences that just, you know, kind of stuck with me. You know, Steve Hall, Professor Hall, who's my instructor and the head of Fight to Win, and I went down to Brazil a few years ago, I guess 2015, for a Naga tournament down there that we were working, and so we spent a good week or so in Rio training at a lot of different academies, and we were over at Gracie Maitá one night, which is, you know, that's the academy that Elio Gracie taught at in Rio. There's a lot of history there, and it's very low key. I mean, you wouldn't even know it was a jiu-jitsu school if you walked by it. You know, the bottom part of it's like an old, like a schoolhouse or something. And, you know, you kind of go up some stairs and there's a mat, you know, a couple mats. You know, Hoyler was teaching there for a while before he moved to the States. And now Holker runs the academy there. One of Hoyce's brothers there, but you know, we showed up and you know, two Americans showing up, black belts, so obviously there's a little bit of a target on your back.
Oh, automatically. Of course.
And the night that we showed up, it was just sparring night, so there was no warm-up, no technical instruction. It's just, you know, we're gonna do 10 minute rounds of hard sparring for, you know, probably about 2 hours. And it was mostly brown and black belts on the mat, a couple purple belts. So it was pretty cool. But obviously, you know, we're going hard and sweating, and, you know, it's Brazil, so it's hot. There's no air conditioning and windows are open. And, you know, just, I remember in the middle of one of the rounds, just looking up and, you know, outside the window of the academy, you can see the Christ statue up there on the mountain, from inside the academy while you're training. And just pretty cool, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I remember another time on that same trip, working the tournament. You know, we do a Naga tournament here in the States. Depending on where it is, you'd be lucky to get a chance to ref a black belt match. There's a few that show up, some of the local tournaments, but not many. But this one that we did in Brazil, you know, it was a small tournament. We probably had 250 maybe competitors, but half of them were black belts.
Wow.
Which was really cool. And I just remember we were in this old gymnasium, and you know, again, it's Brazil, it's hot, there's no air conditioning, you know, you're sweating, and But you know, it's a pretty cool experience just to get to go down there and referee jiu-jitsu in Brazil. And I was reffing and just right before we start the black belt division, all of a sudden, like, it starts raining, and you know, the roof leaks a little bit, so it was raining a little bit on the mat, you know, and the windows are open, but all of a sudden, like, you just get this cool, you know, breeze coming through, kind of cooled everything down. And then, you know, it was just kind of like a surreal experience that, you know, getting to ref, you know, all of these black belts in Brazil, you know, in their home country. So
kind of harkens back to the early days of jiu-jitsu, right? I mean, if you're looking, I mean, you're not in this crazy coliseum, you're just in this building that's leaking water. And
So, you know, and I mean, we could probably go on forever, little moments like that, that, you know, for whatever reason, just kind of stick with you. They're kind of cool, but
for sure. So I'm going to share mine. And that was up at the Origin Immersion Jiu-Jitsu camp. And, Dean Lister was showing a bunch of stuff, and somebody asked a question, and it was on the big man triangle, right?
Fat boy
triangle. So he says, he's somebody big. Obviously, I'm that guy, right? Not as big as I was, but now still big. But he takes me, and he goes, and you do this, and then you take your legs and lock them down, and he locked his legs behind my head and slammed them down on my back, and almost immediately I was seeing stars. And he told me before, and he goes, listen, tap really early, because this is. I was like, yeah, no, I get you. You're Dean Lister. I'm not. And he did that and brought it down on my back, and I didn't have the opportunity to tap on him because it was just so freaking tight. And just,
yeah, you did the head nod.
Yeah, I was like, you're right. But it's a surreal moment because, man, you're so right. You meet so many people in this, you know, getting to meet the person who was responsible for me getting into jiu-jitsu and Jocko Willink there, and spend time with him at that immersion jiu-jitsu camp and be able to talk to him, and to just see, you know, people say never meet your heroes. Well, they're wrong on that guy, because I'll give you for instance, whenever anyone would come up to him, and I'll give you a specific for instance, because this really made an impression on me, and I know it did on you too, Phil, and that is that Jack Davenport, one of our good buddies, Cabin Five, roommates, his wife is going through the battle of her life with cancer, and Jack told Jocko this, and Jocko said, hey, man, just turn around the phone, gave her a beautiful, inspirational, and if you don't fight after Jocko Willink tells you to fight, you're not going to, because, I mean, this guy just brought it, and he would do that with everything. Like, whenever parents of kids would come up and say, hey, you know, my kid loved Way of the Warrior Kid, and he would say, what's your kid's name? Make a personal video. They didn't ask him to do that. He just did it.
Yeah.
And that's incredible, and it speaks to the caliber of person that you meet whenever you're doing jiu-jitsu, and why everyone should do jiu-jitsu. And so before we wrap it up, John, is there anything social media wise, you know, obviously Fight to Win Denver, that's where you're at. We've got the Facebook page, Fight to Win Denver, if you want to come train with us.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, and not just us, but, you know, our whole Fight to Win network of teams, obviously, you know, my academy's in Denver, North Carolina, not the one in Colorado,
but
the real Denver.
Good, yeah. Denver of the East.
Funny, because my girlfriend's from the other Denver. So we mess around about that all the time. But you know, not just mine, our headquarters at the Charlotte Academy, Professor Steve Hall, and then all of our other affiliate academies that we have, you know, in Asheville with Brad Hanna. We have our Spartanburg school with Ben Holder. We've got Charles Nunley down in Fayetteville. We've got the Shelby Academy. with Webb and Roland and those guys. We've got the Concord location now that Steve is out there quite a bit as well. So yeah, you know, wherever you're at, there's a good opportunity. Oh, also, of course, Belmont, our newest affiliate.
Sure, Terry.
First affiliate under me, Terry Massey, one of our purple belts at the Belmont School. So you know, wherever you are, there's opportunities to get in and get on the mat and train. We're pretty easy to find. Just Google Fight to Win, find your closest academy and get in there and train. You know, come check out the class and see if it's for you.
That's great advice. Great advice. Phil, any parting thoughts you have? You were very talkative on this episode.
I was. I feel like I want to give you guys a chance. But obviously, just to thank you for being an awesome instructor. And, I mean, I feel like I got really lucky going down and you were like 10 minutes away from me when I was looking for a place to do something. So, obviously, feel like I left out meeting you guys. So, thank you for always being a great instructor and giving me the opportunity to find jiu-jitsu, basically.
Well, you know, absolutely, it's my pleasure. This is really why I do this. I know what jiu-jitsu's done for me personally. So, I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to share it with other people. And this was never really my plan was to teach jiu-jitsu. Matter of fact, when I was first approached about the idea, I kind of dismissed it completely. But you know, it's worked out really well, and it's amazing to see the impact that it's had on not only my life but so many people's lives, and that's what really makes it worth doing, you know. So,
well, it may not have been your plan, but I can definitely tell you it's your calling.
I think so. Yeah, for sure.
So, just a quick shout out, Troy, thank you for the audio help. You
Big
know,
time.
Folks, we're white belts at podcasting, right? I mean, that's we haven't even got a stripe yet. This is episode 5, right?
It's going to take a while.
Yeah. It's going to take a while. But thanks to Troy for helping us with the audio. It was a big help. Hopefully this audio sounds good. Maybe if it doesn't, take
Very
away
confident.
That thanks
sounds
to
amazing.
Him. But, you know, if you're not out there doing something to make yourself better, get out there and do it. And jiu-jitsu is one of those things. And that's what we're going to be doing. So keep listening. Like us on Facebook. Give us a review, if you will. We've got a Facebook page, BJJ Campaign.
Do you want to type up the whole list for people? Because it was tough to get the list, and we can post it on Facebook for people.
We'll get a whole list, yes. That would be
good. We'll do another episode.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be many more like that.
Yeah.
But like us on Facebook, BJJ Campaign Podcast. We appreciate everyone's support. We appreciate everyone's ideas out there. And as always, thanks for listening.
I'm about to feed them to the sharks right now.
Get them hype right now.
Yeah. You know the ground is on.
Yeah.
Everybody that trains, you know the game.
Yeah.
So let's get it. Slap it up, bump it, and roll.
Hey.
Yeah, that's the way that it go. Ain't no better way to better yourself in this game. You're feeling the growth.
That's
time on the mat. We put in the work. Believe it ain't easy, I know. But we train for the love of the game, the love of the art. Now slap it up, bump it, let's roll.
Let's roll.